Why are you in the dark?
You really? Because I'm in the Batcave. Welcome to Rated Gen X. We're 350-something slackers, and we're going on a journey back in time to revisit some of the iconic films that shaped our lives.
How did I become a slacker? No. Okay, fine. Each week, we'll rewatch an 80s film through a modern lens.
Then we'll see how our memories stack up.
So, Gabe, remind us what you picked this week.
This is the scripted part of the program.
So, yeah, I know, right?
We're almost through.
If it isn't readily apparent.
Here comes the fun. Today, we're going to slide down the bat pole, dive deep into the guano of Tim Burton's Batman. 1989. Can y'all remind me why 1989 is a significant year?
Why don't you tell us why 1989 is a significant
year? It's the year we graduated from high school.
Doesn't that put us right smack dab in the middle of the Gen X spectrum, so we are legitimized?
We're at the intersection of the X. We're the fulcrum.
Well, big word choice.
This movie literally came out weeks after high school graduation.
Yep.
And it was something I was so much looking forward to. They had released Batman trading cards. I went and bought them. MTV was doing a win the Batmobile contest, and I was about sending in postcards and making the phone calls, dialing the 1-900 number, whatever you needed to do to get that. And I had just been such a huge fan. And during the high school years was when the Frank Miller Dark Knight series came out, and I'd really gotten this appreciation for this new, darker, promised version of Batman. So this idea that Tim Burton, who was an up-and-coming director at the time, he wasn't a household name the way he is now, but he was a known entity. If you were familiar with his career up to now, he had done Beetlejuice, and he had done Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So I had very high hopes for this movie. As you can tell, it probably did not live up to my high expectations. What do y'all remember about when Batman came out?
So I think really the only thing at that point had been Superman that I remember that in my brain, and it was Christopher Reeve. And he was like, I mean, he could not have been the more perfect Clark Kent, the more perfect Superman, to the point where he was almost typecast in those roles. So then to choose Michael Keaton as Batman, I was like, what? No? Like, yeah, I just couldn't absorb it. Yeah,
it was a controversial choice. He was known largely for being sort of a comedic actor. He had come off of Beetlejuice, where he was outrageous, but brilliant. I think Beetlejuice is a top-notch performance. So he was known predominantly at this point of his career for doing a lot more comedic style roles. So yeah, this was a huge left turn and was extremely controversial at the time. Do you remember, Curtis?
Yeah, I remember hearing about that as well. And thinking like, yeah, that's kind of weird, because you always assume like, you know, I'm just like you, Gabe. Like, I was way into the Dark Knight Returns. I mean, I was a massive Batman fan from when I was a kid. Like, I got about 100 Batman comic books in my attic. My grandmother sewed me one of those felt Batman outfits, and I jumped around the garage and bit a hole through my tongue pretending to fight crime, and you know. But I remember being so jazzed and so I didn't realize how incredibly hungry I was for more, you know, Batman content beyond the show, that like the Michael Keaton thing like didn't bother me. I was just like, I don't care, I can't wait to see it. Then like when the movie came out, that kind of quieted down, I thought.
But yeah, because he kind of nailed it. But yeah, what up until this
point, agree. But go ahead.
For context, we can have this conversation. For context, leading up to this, like the biggest Batman in our lives was the 60s TV show starring Adam West and Burt Ward. Super campy, was kind of seen as dumbed down and really, you know, for children, full of dad jokes and puns.
Everything was labeled.
Batarang.
When was the last time you watched the old show, though?
I've seen it recently. I've actually watched
it. It's pretty loaded with some adult stuff that went right over my head when I was a kid, actually.
I do remember it was very, very pop art. And it's ripe for reevaluation. When you see it now, you can actually see all this pop art influence on it. It's almost like Roy Lichtenstein or Andy Warhol. Like, it is.
Yeah, they had the boom, pow.
Self-conscious. And at the time, I don't think people got the irony, so that when the Tim Burton Batman came out, people were like, oh no, we're going to reclaim the Dark Knight from this cartoon background. Now, the other thing we grew up with were the Super Friends, and the Super Friends were ultimately like just as corny, right? Like they were in the Hall of Justice, and they
I forgot about the Super Friends.
That was the other version of Batman, right? It was Batman and Robin. Robin, of course, voiced by Casey Kasem, and which is brilliant. And the Super Friends were also corny AF. Like they are the worst bunch of superheroes. That's the one where Wonder Woman has
Batman was the corniest, actually.
They were the worst. And that even like they had the Wonder Twins on there. It's
yes, it, Wonder it's Twins powers activate. Okay, I remember.
Form of a bucket of water. Form of a bird. Let's save the planet.
Where do these things get stored in our brains? I don't even understand how like it's
so much unnecessary knowledge. The building that was the model for the Hall of Justice on Super Friends is an actual building in Cincinnati. It was a train station and now it's a museum. So people who cosplay and who do real life superhero action will go there to take pictures. They'll go to Cincinnati to take pictures in front of original.
I'm already planning to dig up my Batman outfit and do it.
Totally do it. But it's weird because again, our expectations for the Tim Burton Batman were like, it's dark. It's gonna be gothic. It's so different from the 60s Adam West Batman. And the final result, we can have this conversation again a little deeper in when we rewatch it and evaluate. But I remember even at the time being like, nah, this is pretty close to the Adam West Batman, in my opinion. They took out the blue and replaced it with black, but it's still pretty corny.
So I can't remember if I actually ever saw it or not. I hate to admit that, but yeah, I mean, I remember I was a huge fan of Adam West. I would watch that. I met Adam West. He came to sign autographs. I was living in Harrisburg at the time at Hershey and got a little signed autograph. It said from one crime fighter to another. I'm a crime fighter. I don't think you guys realize that. But I don't even know if I went and saw it.
And we can't overstay for those in the audience who are younger, who didn't live through it the first time. Can't overstate how big this movie was. This was the biggest movie, not just of the summer, but I think of the decade. Like it was a massive hit. It changed the culture and the success.
Lines around the block.
Yeah, the success of this movie changed the way Hollywood approached superhero movies. Like if it weren't for Batman, there would not be the Marvel Universe today. They would not have made the Spider-Man movies. They would have not have made Iron Man and all that. Like, this Batman movie changed the entire trajectory of movie making the same way Jaws and Star Wars in the 70s did. This, in the end of the 80s, right into 1990, changed the next 20, 30 years of filmmaking. Like, it's that important a movie, whether we liked it or not. So it was massively successful, massively loved. It was a beloved movie. So some of the opinions you may hear today, mine was true at the time, and we're going to rewatch it, and I don't have high expectations, I'll be honest with you. I was so disappointed at the time that I can't imagine it living up to them now. And I've got a lot more to compare it to now. Obviously, Christopher Nolan came along a number of years later and fulfilled my dream. And I'll even be super controversial and say I think the Robert Pattinson Batman is better. I think the most recent Batman is a very take on the whole thing. And I think it's closest to the Frank Miller vision of all of
them. Oh, yeah.
It's fascinating what the Robert
Pattinson definitely easier on the eyes, that's for sure. I'm just going to say that. Although, you know, that he's pretty young, it's kind of creepy for me to say. But anyway, okay, so we're going to go watch it. But I want to ask you guys a question before we go watch it.
Yeah.
So if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Let's think about it, and we'll talk about it after we watch Batman.
Let's watch it.
Bye. Okay, bye.
Want to dunk on your friends? Tired of not being the center of attention at every party? Do you yearn to derail a conversation with a trivial bit of obscure knowledge? Have we got the remedy for you? Podcasts! Podcasts give you the ability to feel just like Malcolm Gladwell all the time. History? There's a podcast for that. Science? Ditto. True crime? Buckle up, Buttercup. The best part? You don't even have to read. Put so many ideas in your head, and you'll be dropping more bombs than someone who tried the mystery meat melt at Taco Bell. Podcasts. You're soaking in it.
Okay. Okay, we're back. All right. Curtis made me wait to hear his superpower. I wanted to hear it before the movie, but he made me wait. So fine. Okay, Curtis.
My superpower would definitely be the power of flight, because I'm terrified of heights and I want to be like Batman and face my fear. That's why Batman chose bats, right? Because he picked this thing that he's terrified of.
Well, it depends on which mythology you go to, right? In the mythology of the movie you just watched, they said bats are survivors. That was his philosophy in that movie. It makes no sense. But let's get to Aaron's
that movie.
Oh, mine. Mine would be the power of influence. It's kind of an evil one.
Like the power of suggestion. Like I heard.
Yeah, just to get my way all the time.
You want evil Jedi mind tricks.
The power
this chicken
influence.
Sandwich
yeah.
is free.
Yeah, this yeah. If you can just influence free. Anyone to I see things now. Your way, think about that. Think about how, I mean, that's everything. Mm-hmm. It's everything. Just the power of influence. Just get people to be on your side, no matter what.
Aaron, that's like totally the best.
It's world domination is really
it
what
is. The power really of influence is. To get people on your side is the greatest power.
No, I probably shouldn't.
I 100% agree with you. So I'm going to jump in with my
superhero power.
I would love the ability to stop time and control time. Mm-hmm. I think being a time shifter is the greatest thing. And that is the byproduct maybe a little bit of neurodivergence and just being like, oh, if I only had more time to finish that assignment or read that book, mm-hmm. it would have been awesome. And I could be like, oh, there, let me finish that book for you and spend 6 hours reading the book. And then like, I'm right on time. I got everything done. I'm organized. Thank you.
So you say stop time, but not travel through time.
Probably not travel through, although, again, depending on what the rules of the time-shifting universe are, I would adhere to whatever they are. Like, it just depends on what universe you're in, apparently. But time-shifting and time-stopping. Because the question is, right, if you stop time, do you age, right? So, like, if you stop time for a month, do you age 1 month? So when you die a month earlier than everybody else? Or does time stop and your body stops aging? Like when you stop time, do birds stop mid-flight? Or do like when you stop time, they no longer are buoyant? Do they fall to the ground? Like it's that type of question, right?
And yeah. I think
so do you want the you age or not age rider with your
you don't want to age, of course. That you don't want to do. But no, then there's always a trade-off. And you want birds to stay mid-flight, right? You don't want everything to die. Like at every airplane in the sky would just crash if you stop time. No. So then you'd never be able to stop time.
Can you speed up time?
Yeah,
you can stop it or speed it up. Yeah.
I've actually
thought about that a lot too. That's actually probably second line for me, but then Inception changed all that for me. I think in every time it enters my mind, like, gosh, I wish I could stop time because I need more time for this. I think about Inception and then it just freaks me out. And I'm like, yeah.
So we got to revisit this movie from our past, perhaps Aaron, who may or may not have ever seen it earlier on. So now that we've seen it, Aaron, what are your first impressions of The Bow?
There were a lot of what the fuck moments in this movie. There were a lot of what the fuck. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't see it before, I don't think. I've seen it. It's like one of those things where I've seen so many clips of it, I wasn't sure. Mm. I have not. But I really don't think I've watched it in its entirety. And I'm going to be honest, I honestly still probably can say I haven't watched it into its entirety because it lost me a little bit for a while because it was hard for me. In the first 10 minutes I was like, hey, you know what, that's not, I see where this guy's going, you know, it's not so bad. I see a lot of the shots like were, you know, look very much like comic book drawing setups, like the way they were shot, and I'm like, oh, I see where he's going, and the cinematography and the set. And And then it just kind of went off the rails. And I was just like, what's his name? Bruce Wayne shows up to Vicki Vale's apartment, which, by the way, that was one I did like her apartment. She had a very nice apartment. But he shows up. He literally wants to apologize to her. He pushes her down into a chair, pushes her, physically puts hands on her and tells her to shut up. I was like, what the hell's going on? The Joker's makeup, I never understood the whole time, like, I always thought like it was, he was putting on white makeup and that was, everybody knew that, but no. Yeah. Curtis is shaking his head. He's like, no, Aaron, you don't understand. Like Curtis didn't explain what was
going on. I'm a Batman scholar here, but he was affected by the chemicals and that turned his skin white.
Yeah.
Hence the irony when he's like, I've taken off my makeup. Let's see, you know, when he's challenging Batman, but actually he's put makeup on to look.
Right. And yeah. Until he was putting that makeup on, I never realized that because his white makeup looks so much like clown makeup, white makeup, that I'm like, where's your makeup budget? Like to make it look like that, I don't know. I just had so many. I don't. Someone else.
No, Curtis, you jump in. Let's hear your.
I'm surprised. Like, you know, in terms of like watching it then and versus watching it now, like, you know, it's weird for me to talk about it because I was such a huge Batman fan and such an apologist. And I think the movie definitely has tons of problems that I've noticed, thought about, you know, in subsequent viewings and with my Batman knowledge and all those other Batman movies that came out. But like Sign of the Times stuff, like, did anybody notice that when Robert Wool, the character, you know, the guy that plays the reporter, and he meets Kim Basinger, Vicki Vale walks into the newspaper, and he like completely sexually innuendo hits on her twice within 3 seconds.
Yes, right? I remember
if you want to shoot me nude, you're gonna need a long lens, like, you know.
Yes, and, yes.
You know, dick joke.
It's like gross. Well, there was even
Michael Keaton, despite that moment that you pointed out, is like the example of like how you should behave.
When he made that joke, that, and I wrote that down, actually, that exact line, when he made that, it was at least, I think, supposed to be seen as a gross thing. But there was a moment where Batman says to her, how much do you weigh? And she says, oh, about 108. And then he hoists her up and then he puts her down. He's like, you don't weigh 108.
He fat shamed her.
And I'm like, you're an asshole.
That was a fat shaming thing. But I remember when I was in high, that didn't cross my mind at all. I thought it was just cute.
Yeah. But see, for me, had I seen that in high school, I would have been like, that's silly. Like, even for me back in 1989, I would have been like, wow, yuck, gross. So you're alienating a big part of your audience when you do that stuff, I think. But
yeah, it's also, I mean, that whole bit, and I'll jump in here because I think y'all are spot on this point. The movie's like ridiculously sexist.
Oh, yeah.
The body weight issue, that alone, like, how much do you weigh? Meanwhile, he's the one who's carrying around a fucking suit of armor, and he's worried about like her weight, which is absurd. Again, as a Hollywood actress, she's way underweight as it is. Right. And yet they're gonna do this like weird joke for fat shaming her, which again, ridiculous. She's objectified from the second she's on screen, right? Yeah. Even before Arliss, I'm gonna refuse to call him by his actual name, call him Arliss.
Oh, right.
Even before Arliss even addresses her, she's nothing but a pair of legs behind a newspaper, right? Like, she's not even a human being. She's a pair of legs. And then after that point, like, if I were to recite the plot of this movie, the plot of the movie is Vicki Vale harassed by her work coworker,
right?
Harassed by Bruce Wayne, who, by the way, like, she goes over to his house for a date and he gets her drunk and she says, like, I'm intoxicated, then wakes up the next morning, like, kind of out of it because she's a little out of it. And then he's hanging upside down because he's cool Batman, but she doesn't know that yet. And then the Joker decides he's going to kidnap her because she's the hottest thing he's ever seen. And then she spends the whole movie, literally by the final act, being a rag doll in the top of the fucking tower. Like,
what was up with that? Why is she flopping around?
It's so absurd. Like, it could not be more offensive. So she's a badass in real life.
Keanu Reeves.
And she's a badass in real life. Like, she deserves so much more than this. And it's such a shame. When I look back on this movie, like, how wasted she is in this movie. She's like, this is the very year that at the Oscars, she went up and presented, like, she was introducing one of the best pictures. And she's like, and by the way, the Academy fucked up. They didn't nominate, like, Do the Right Thing. And that was considered a hugely, like, outspoken move. Like, she's always been a huge, outspoken person. She stood up for herself and would not do the movie Boxing Helena. And she lost the court case on that because she thought. And so, again, because she's maligned for being, quote unquote, pretty, but she's a badass and she never got the credit for it. And this is a movie where it's her talent's wasted. Like, literally, the opening scene with her there is they say, oh, by the way, she's a fashion photographer and she also just filmed, like, genocide.
Yeah.
Okay. She's an award-winning Pulitzer caliber photographer. she can tag along with you. Like, she's an award-winning photographer in the whole movie. She's just objectified and treated by everybody like total garbage.
Right, because she's constantly in need of someone to protect her and save her. Although she does sort of save Robert Wool from the thing.
Yeah, barely.
From the gas in the street. But, like, the whole time, you know, she's flopping around, dancing on the top of the cathedral as we're waiting for Batman to come and save her. And the only thing that she can do to put up a fight is to pretend that suddenly she's interested in the Joker. Yeah. And kissing on him and stuff to provide a distraction. That's all she's got.
And there's like an innuendo with like an oral sex joke right there. If you look at it carefully. The other thing she does, she screams about 25 times in this movie. Like, she does a high pitched scream, and it happens all the time. Now, I don't know if that was really her, if they use a sound effect. It would get a total F on the Bechdel test. To me, the movie also, and this is where I'm going to go after the other stuff, the idea that even though he went for this very dark and gothic look, right, the set design is amazing. He went for a very highly stylized world compared to, the Adam West campy Batman that we'd grown up with. So what made that Batman so distinctive is its color schemes were heightened the way comic books are heightened. This one instead went with a very dark palette, right? It's gray, it's dark, and then Joker's colors are meant to contrast, but Batman, instead of being in the blue and gray suit with the yellow, is just very dark.
Right.
But despite that, the movie is campy AF. Like, the movie is super campy. And just weird examples. Like, he pulls a gun out of his pants in the third act that's like the size of a cannon, right? It's like a long gun. It looks like something out of fucking Bugs Bunny.
Dang.
And at the time, people talked about this like it was a dark movie and they're taking it back from Adam West. I'm like, this Joker is as bad as the Joker we grew up with. This isn't dark. This is comical.
There was an identity crisis. There was a definite identity crisis. And the one scene where I really saw it was where he goes, and first of all of a sudden he has all these gadgets, which was kind of random, but he goes and he's in the meeting and he shakes the guy's hand and the guy burns to death. And that's really grotesque. And everyone's just kind of sitting there and the guy's like literally just a charred corpse. And yet it wasn't treated that way. It was very weird. There was like a definite identity crisis. And I wondered during it, it's like, okay, are there times where a director is in the middle of a film and realizes, shit, this is not going to be what I want it to be. And they're just, because I can't imagine, or if they have the ability, if it's just on them and they actually have the ability and the power to change everything. And the way it ends up is the way he wanted it to be.
I think this is what he was going for. I do think there is, I think you've hit on something, which is, he had made a few films before this. So Pee-wee's Big Adventure is very light and comical. And then he made Beetlejuice, which is dark, but kind of is a light twist on the Haunted House movie. Mm-hmm. But the person being fried looks like something out of Beetlejuice, right? It has like the sense of that look and feel. But the campy stuff he went with, to me, felt very connected to the Adam West Batman. It felt like he was tapping into the campiness of that. I mean, you have gas attacks, hand buzzers, a TV ad where they're talking about poisoning the cosmetics, right? A Jack in the Box where a card pops out. Like the art museum where they're defacing the art to be Joker style. Again, that's a comment on the art. But it is also, at the time, the feminist movement of the Guerrilla Girls was doing things like this. So he's appropriated the Guerrilla Girls movement, which is meant to call out the sexism in these things. But instead, he's doing the most sexist movie. And yet he's taking the aesthetic of sort of this hip, cool movement. I feel like he didn't earn the right to do that. And I felt like the film is full of this irony. I think you're exactly right, Aaron. It's like it has this unsettled thing where it wanted to be dark, but it's informed by this childish, immature, like, you know, comic book sensibility that he couldn't let go of. And I think he looked at it through the wonder of a child, but with the darkness of somebody who's like, I'm gonna make it gothic and dark.
Now that we know Tim Burton movies so well, looking at that movie, to me, it's totally on brand for him, because he's like, you know, obviously Halloween's like his favorite thing. Like, think about Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, he revels, and you hear the fun music when there's like grotesque weird shit. So like that's that macabre like joy or fun or fascination. But like, I do have to say, like, on a subconscious level, I was disappointed, because for all that, like Gabe said, it nailed it before. Like, it's really more like the Adam West show than the comic books at all.
It felt very disconnected in this, and in other movies, he does do a good job of like combining those things, whereas in this one, he just didn't. And maybe there was too much going on. I don't know what was going on with him, but probably Kim Basinger gets more screen time and more lines than anyone else, but and yet in all the wrong ways. You know,
I think the saving grace, you know, a lot of people would say like that movie was really Jack Nicholson, but I think Michael Keaton nailed, like he played the part perfectly, but everything going on around him and the movie and stuff like comes off goofy, but to no fault of his own. So it is a weird mix. So some stuff felt like.
So Curtis, you liked his performance. You liked
this is where you get to go at it.
Yeah, let's get into this. Curtis, you like the Keaton performance.
I like the Keaton performance. You know, we talked about superpowers, but like for me, Batman was always my favorite hero because he doesn't have any superpowers. He's simply driven by his will to fight crime. And, you know, he trains himself and all. I mean, I'm very much, you know, aware of the whole Batman story and Batman legend and all that.
There's a number of issues with playing Batman in any role, right? Mm. And we know Keaton played him in the first two. And then in the subsequent version that was directed by Joel Schumacher, I believe, Val Kilmer stepped in. And then after Val Kilmer was George Clooney. And they got progressively weirder in their choices.
Was Affleck after Kumi?
Yes, but Affleck is because technically the next
Affleck's post Christian Bale.
Yeah, Christian Bale.
Oh, okay, that's right.
That whole series. And then Affleck's version.
God, there's been a lot.
Yeah, there's been a lot of Batman.
But yeah, tonally for me, like I like the Nolan movies or the Robert Pattinson one is more close to like the way I kind of what I was hoping for really going into Batman 1989 was more like that.
That's what
I didn't care because I was so like, I'm gonna love it no matter how crappy it is, you know.
Do you want to hear the most ironic thing? Is if you watch Beetlejuice, you know he'd make a really good Joker.
Michael Keaton.
And in fact, my contention for this movie is, and this is the idea that if we can go back in time with my time traveling skills, if we go back in time, what would make this movie brilliant are two things. One is fix all the gender shit we talked about. But number two is you actually cast Michael Keaton in both roles.
Ooh. Well, that's the idea, because Batman and Robin are doppelgangers.
Batman and Joker, right. Joker is always
they're both dealing with trauma in different ways.
Correct. And this movie,
mind blown.
I know, right? Because as Beetlejuice, the character of Beetlejuice, and if you say it three times, he's going to appear. So everybody, one more time, I'm done.
No.
As that character, he's the Joker, right? That character is the Joker. So it's really ironic that he has to button it up. Now I feel, and I heard Ben Affleck say this years later, and I think it's a theory from Kevin Smith. So Ben Affleck was telling a story that Kevin Smith told him. He says, here's the secret to playing Batman. Nobody cares who's in the suit. Right. When you play Batman, it's how good of a Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
That's the key.
And it's how good your Bruce Wayne is.
Affleck was the best Bruce Wayne. We can argue about that, but that's what Kevin Smith believed. I think Keaton is a very good Bruce Wayne, but he's almost too aloof. And I almost feel like the world they've created for him is too ridiculous. So he's playing a serious character in a goofy movie. So he's in the movie we want to see, but the movie he's in is not the same. He's playing a serious role and he's in a clown show.
Well, because Ben Affleck's aloofness as Bruce Wayne is planned because he wants to come off as aloof versus like, I think what Gabe's saying is Michael Keaton's aloofness is legit aloofness because he just can't comprehend or connect to like the everyday stuff,
but it just feels so stagey and silly and just not even human, whereas the other versions of Batman have given you a reason why he's the way he is, and it makes more sense. Like in the Christian Bale version, they came up with a whole explanation that like he wants the world to underestimate him, he wants the world to think that he's just like a playboy running around spending daddy's money.
Right.
That gives him cover to be Batman. But like if you're just like an aloof, remote billionaire living in a house, like there's no story there. But then he's hosting charity events. And then you're like, okay, he's hosting charity events. But then certain people in this world don't seem to know who he is. It was very curious how this, the placement of this one. They hadn't established his mythology. And this one, to me, it has two other cardinal sins in it. And one is we get to the origin story again.
Yeah,
every Batman has the origin story. Oh, his parents got killed. But to have the Joker be the shooter in this movie is a real mistake, in my opinion.
Yep.
It creates this full circle thing. And I know there are versions of the comic book that have done this as well, but it's too much. Like,
yeah.
What makes Batman Batman is the randomness of the act of violence and his general desire to have to protect the world. And in this case, he doesn't, like, his motivation is never clear, I'll be honest with you. Like, getting from that trauma to driving around in a car and dressing up in a suit and being a vigilante, like, everybody just assumes that's what's supposed to happen because we know the end result. But there's no logic to how he got there the way some of the other shows have built that in. I think that they've done a better job, obviously, Nolan and others, of defining why he's doing what he's doing, as opposed to, well, of course, if your parents are killed when you're young, you're going to take your $1 billion and build a cave in the basement of your house and dress up like a bat and roam the streets. Like, and
the ultimate man cave.
Yeah, why aren't you going to do that? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So right. I was always very perplexed by that. And then, again, the Joker in this movie, I like Nicholson, but he's all over the place, right?
Yeah.
It's very much the Cesar Romero Joker. Yeah, I mean,
I like it better when he's in movies where they encourage him to bring the element of Nicholson, but not just be completely predictably Nicholson. And I don't know. I feel like this was, yeah.
I'm also wondering, like, how much free reign Tim Burton got and how much the studio said, no, we want more of this.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying too. Like, I wonder, yeah, like what I was
saying. They're selling the lunchbox. They're selling the cup. They're selling the t-shirt. They're not just making the movie. So they have, right. You know.
Because did they, yeah, exactly. Because did they really give him, you know, the free reign? Yeah, like you're saying, because it felt like maybe they're like, oh, he did great with Beetlejuice, let's bring him in. But then they might have controlled him more, and maybe I wonder. And like I was saying, I wonder if this really ended up what he wanted it to be or not. But Gabe seems to think it probably was.
I think he did.
It made a lot of money, so it made a lot of money. So it ended up being a blockbuster. So yeah.
He did what they wanted him to do.
I'm really surprised they killed the Joker off, the more I think about it, because he's the number one villain that, you know, that they're always had going back and forth. But I guess they were thinking, we need to have a more satisfactory ending, and who knows if we're going to...
Batman is not supposed to kill anybody, right? His whole thing is he doesn't kill people.
He doesn't, so
the fact that he's pushing people off buildings and knocking them down, that's not consistent with the Batman's ethos. And if you look at the Nolan version, they're very deliberate. The Joker wants him to kill him, and he won't do it, right? He hangs him from the...
Right. He's got a rule about killing, and no guns. Guns are for cowards.
No killing and no guns. So it's a specific take on the character. There are darker versions of Batman that get into that. But I think the philosophy has to be the Joker lives, right? That's the whole point, that if you kill the Joker, he's not in Arkham Asylum, and that's it for him, right? You know, the Batmobile pops its wheel, and the Joker got away. Like, that's the end of that. How it's supposed to go. I don't understand.
Jingle bells, Batman smells.
Yeah. And in this one, he's ending. I mean, I would have been fine if they let him fly away on the rope ladder. Like, let him go on the rope ladder in the helicopter. Which, like, by the way, total callback to the corny original Batman movie where they're on the helicopter with the shark repellent.
With the shark jumping on his corny leg. Big plastic toy shark.
Yeah.
He's got anti-shark spray. And
this has the same joke, right? There's Joker hanging on there, the big gargoyle hanging from his leg, right? Like, that Tim Burton knew what he was doing, and I think he was taking the piss out of everybody who thought this was a dark movie.
The dude's got the most inept henchmen in the world. Like, obviously he's having problems getting up the ladder. Like, maybe they could just fly over back in the building so he could take the thing off his leg and then go. But
yeah, exactly.
But in 1989, I don't remember anybody walking around going, that sucked. I mean, it kind of ruled the summer, or ruled the year, you know?
I was the one. That was me. I was the hater with time.
There's some feminist problems here and some color scheme issues.
It's so different now with social media. The negatives get so much time and get to, you know, with on X and on various social media outlets. You know, I think back then you just don't, the negative reviews don't get as much attention as they might now.
I would rather watch the new version, speaking of time travel problems, of Flash that has this Batman in it, than watch this Batman again.
Me too.
That's my super hot take.
I agree.
There, fight me. Fight me. Just how it is. I mean, again,
I gotta say, I'm surprised Michael Keaton came back and wanted to wear that suit, because it's not fun to wear that suit.
The suit is a huge problem in this movie too. And there's apparently a joke that Nicholson, at one point, he saw Keaton, because, you know, Keaton wanted to be able to do those upside down sit-ups at one point, and he was working out. At one point, Nicholson walks by there at the hotel in their pre-production.
Oh, right.
He's like, dude, why are you working out? And he's like, because I'm, you know, I'm Batman. I gotta be ready for these fights. He's like, just work the suit, man. Just work the suit. Like, the whole time you're in this suit, and suddenly Keaton's like, he's right. I shouldn't be that buff. In fact, I should be super thin, because this suit is heavy and I don't want to be jamming it up. Like, the suit has armor on it.
It's not Roadhouse, baby.
The problem with the suit is it's too restrictive. Like, you can tell he can't see. He literally can't turn his head in this movie. He's supposed to be agile, and if he gets attacked by two people, there's no way he can fight them. Like, and they fix that in subsequent versions, obviously, by the time they get to the Christopher Nolan version. He's
at least there weren't nipples on it.
They went that way a couple years later when Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, that's when I was like, I'm out.
Are we ever going to try to do ratings again? Are we going to try to give it a rating? Official Gen X rating?
Yeah.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. So coming up, we're going to talk about rating this and figure out how we're going to do it.
Yeah. Well, it is called Rated Gen X, so we have to come up with some way to rate it Gen X.
So coming up, we're going to rate it Gen X. The Gen X's are going to rate it.
Yes.
Hey, everyone. So apparently I owe a huge apology to Taco Bell. Apparently, their food can actually be enjoyed by regular humans with functioning digestive systems. So, next time I need a cheap joke, I'll avoid poking fun at Taco Bell. Because someday, we might actually have real sponsors. And besides, everyone knows if you have some spare change and you're looking for a delicious and totally risk-free meal, head on down to Taco Bell. They've got everything you could need. Including bathrooms.
So, welcome back. And we're going to rate this now.
We're rating it Gen X.
Rated Gen X, and we're Gen Xers, and we're rating. Okay.
Yeah, I'm giving it a giant pile of guano. I dislike this movie. It did not disappoint. Rather, it did, because I knew it. I already didn't like it when I was younger, and boy, it lived down to my expectations. It was worse than I remembered. So, guano.
Three guanos.
That's some kind of military call sign. Guano, calling Lambda Pi Lambda. Are you in, Guano?
I'm unprepared.
Okay, I agree with Gabe on the one hand. It totally, looking at it, watching it now, it kind of sucks for all the reasons we talked about. But my 18-year-old self would have been like, oh, you know, 3 out of 3 batarangs. So I think what I'm going to do is give it 2 batarangs, just because personally of what it did for me at the time and helped shape who I am today as I try and live by the ideals of a person seeking justice, like Batman. Be Batman.
As a crime fighter.
Always be yourself. Unless you can be Batman, then be Batman.
Okay.
Batman. I like that.
Okay, so if I'm understanding this correctly, under Gabe's rating system, the more guano, the worse. Under Curtis's rating system, the more batarangs, the better.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just giving it an I can't even. That's it.
There you go. With
I can't even.
The pile of
not so.
Just what Kim Basinger should have said.
I can't even. Yes, that is what she should have said.
With a guano chaser.
Not even worth. Exactly. It's not even worth the guano.
That's perfect. Before we get to next week's movie, I wanted to have a little side conversation to talk about one of the features we're going to be adding to the show that we want everybody to know about, which are our very cool mixtapes. We'll be talking more about how to access them in the closing credits. But I just wanted to share the idea of the mixtapes and how much fun they're going to be. And again, this one, we never even talked about Prince during this conversation.
True.
And I know Aaron has some opinions about the Prince soundtrack. But this, the movie soundtrack to Batman was really interesting because Prince recorded an entirely original soundtrack to the movie before it was completed, and he did it in 2 weeks. He literally was like, I'll do this. Two of the songs ended up in the movie, right? The 200 Balloons at the end and the song they play during the art museum escapade.
Oh, yeah.
And then yes. Bat Dance was one of the great songs of our childhood, I think. I love Bat Dance.
Yeah. I think
I argue that Bat Dance is better than the movie. Like, Bat Dance is the musical that this movie wishes it was.
Well, yeah, Bat Dance is better than the absolutely horrible movie, but the bar is so low. Okay,
It is great. There's a line in the song Bat Dance where he says, if a man is considered guilty for what goes on in his mind, then give me the electric chair for all my future crimes. That is poetry right there. That is Prince laying it out. That song is money.
I do like that line. I do like that line. I think it maybe might serve better on a mug or a t-shirt than in the along with the musical accompaniment that he chose.
Good.
But
it's good. All right. I like that. Mixtapes growing up, they were like a love letter. And you made a mixtape for your friend, or you got one from some friends. They were just, you know, mixtape of songs. And it was a way, oftentimes, to tell a boo, like, hey, I might like you. They would play the mixtape and be like, no, that song's just for friends. But mixtapes were a way to communicate. This is our love letter, both to the movie and to our listeners. We're going to include songs that are inspired by the movie, songs that make us think about the story in the movie. They do not have to be soundtrack songs, just so you know, we're not being literal, but that's going to be the fun. So I can't wait to get into it. And we've had a lot of fun just building them ourselves. So Batman, I've done. Next week's movie, Aaron's picked, she's done. So we'll invite you to listen to the mixtape after the show and as a way to get ready for next week's show.
And so what we're going to start out with, because Spotify is very strange in some ways in which we don't have a real username, we're going to link the link to the mixtape on the Instagram. That's how we'll start out, and then we'll add additional. So you'll always be able to find the link to the mixtape on the Instagram. So go to the Instagram and check that out. And then we need to talk about next week.
Yes,
our next movie. I got to choose.
Well, Aaron, tell us about the movie.
I chose. War Games.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I'm excited.
Global thermonuclear war.
No, we play.
Uh-oh.
Get ready.
They gave it three guanos.
Man, what a good choice. I remember this movie. The movie was big in our childhood. Again, 1983. So
yeah.
I'm a couple years younger. The big thing I remember is I did see it in a theater, but I also, it was very early when HBO came out, and my grandma had HBO, and it was one of the, like, I felt like when HBO first came on the air, they had, like, maybe a catalog of 10 movies.
Yeah.
And you could watch the same movies over and over and over again. So I remember watching this a lot.
Was it even on 24 hours a day yet?
HBO was. Yeah,
because there were those other things, like, it comes on at 5 o'clock, and we've got two movies.
Yeah. HBO was on 24 hours, and they'd send you the little booklet, and you'd have the whole. Remember, you'd have.
They would have all 10 movies listed, like all the times
every. Every month, you get your HBO guide in the paper in the mail, in the USPS.
I saw this, and I saw Clash of the Titans many times. Those were another movie. It was on repeat on HBO, but early. The great choice, Aaron.
I've never seen it.
Perfect Gen X choice. I've never seen it.
So we'll talk about that more in the next episode. Is there anything else, Curtis? Do you want to add anything about War Games before we close out?
You know that. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Tell me how good of a pick it is.
It's a great pick. It's a great pick for me because honestly, like Batman, I've probably seen 100 times, but War Games, I don't think I've seen it since the '80s, maybe like on a VHS in like 1986 or something. So that'll be cool because I have some vague memories, feelings of it about like nuclear war, Cold War. But it was like, I remember really liking the movie, but I'm psyched to see it again.
Do you want to give us a teaser? Do you remember what some of the songs in the mixtape are?
My mixtape? You know what? You know, I really went with, because I made the mixtape without having seen it.
Hey, that's kind of, that's probably the better.
But I have a general idea of what it's about. So mine was generally about, basically a lot about war and about power and about narcissism. You know what? I had some mixed feelings of my mixtape about, I did include one song, Fall Out Boy song, where Kanye West makes an appearance, and Kanye is problematic. And I had some, I was like, should I include it? Should I not? And then once I listened to it, because okay, again, the theme is sort of, there's a narcissism theme there. I thought it fit. And then also, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of maybe foreshadowing with War Games in terms of how AI could be problematic in our world. And I felt like in Kanye's rap, when you listen to it, it's kind of creepy how there's some foreshadowing in kind of how he ends up acting out. Because this rap that he did for this Fall Out Boy song shows a lot of his, of what he ends up tweeting and the things that end up being really scary about him. So I just found that was interesting because it was like, yeah, he showed us kind of some of his thought process a while back.
Not meant to be safe. That's why mixtapes, they got a mix. And if you don't like the song that's there.
Yeah. So, yeah. So don't listen to it thinking Aaron's all about these people. Listen to it thinking that it just relates to the subject matter. And
what the movie makes you think of.
Right. Yeah, and this is not an iPad on shuffle, y'all. iPod on shuffle, y'all. This is like deliberately ordered, selected songs curated by Aaron. So I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. So let's say, by Aaron. Tell Aaron. Go after Aaron.
Yeah, if you don't like Kanye, Aaron picked that one. That was her. I did Batman though. I want y'all to hear the Batman one too. It's really fun. Best choice on Batman, just for a little surprise there, is Cats in the Cradle. That should tell you everything you need to know about his daddy.
Yeah.
We can't wait to hear your feedback in the future. Obviously, give us. You can rate us. You can give us as many guanos as you like. Let's rock it out. Close it out. Should we do the? Can I do my queso? Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
Do it.
Go out.
Do it.
We're looking for a catchphrase. So, until we find it, we're looking for a catchphrase. I don't know. We need a catchphrase.
What?
That's going to be our catchphrase.
There you go.
Rock on, dude. You're not going to harsh on your mellow.
Bye.
Rated Gen X is written, performed, and produced by Gabe Wardell, Aaron O'Reilly, and Curtis Ames. Post-production by Gabe Wardell. Microphones by Sonic Presence. 80s Fast Break Synth Vibes by Ryan Thomas Johnson. If you liked Rated Gen X, share this episode with a friend. Disagree with any of the hot takes in this episode? Bring it. Got a suggestion for an upcoming movie? Preach. Engage with us on the Instagram and the TikTok and the YouTube at Rated Gen X Pod. And say hi to MySpace Tom while you're browsing the socials. Boomers, welcome too. Email us hello@ratedgenxpod.com. To listen to Gabe's mixtape inspired by Batman, visit the show notes on ratedgenxpod.com or find the mixtape on Insta. Thank you for listening to Rated Gen X. This hereby concludes our podcasting day.
Is that my cue?
Yeah, Aaron's like, what's your catchphrase?